Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And let me go down this little quick rat hole that as I've been trying to help you understand, the debt is fraud. The money that they've been borrowing, they've had no authority to borrow all that money. As a matter of fact, our entire financial system since the Organic Act of 1871, actually before then, has been played with, manipulated in every fashion of these manipulations, these plays that have been done. It has been unconstitutional. Now, as we started going down and creating the National Treasury, whether, you know, we look at Hamilton as a spy or not, at least what was put into place with the first Treasury Act was to actually establish something that the Constitution demanded. So understanding how Hamilton and Marshall were advocates in aggrandizing the control that the court had and in assuming powers that were not delegated to interpret and create law, I mean, obviously, that was something that the courts gave themselves. And the rest of the federal government, the other branches, the executive as well as the legislative, did not hold the court accountable. And this is how they have created these different forms of government right under our very nose. But let me focus a little bit on this thing called our debt and actually our finances, because I know this comes up in some of my conversations, and I'm sure that this may actually come up in your conversation. So the question, the standing question that I had is, what is the current holding of the United States in its gold? In other words, what does the government claim to possess? Okay? And so if you actually go look for the gold reserves by country, you'll probably find the website tradingeconomics.com, and you can go to gold reserves country list, right? So if you kind of look that up, you're going to find that the nation that has the highest repository of gold in tonnage, this is all done in tonnage, is the United States. And it's had this, I'll say, this repository of gold for quite a while. In other words, if you look through the past few years, it has maintained its same amount of gold. So in other words, had it actually been following the system of printing more money, they would have had to have actually injected, if they were following the constitutional process, that every bill was commutable, but they went away from that. The Constitution didn't allow them to go away from that. They chose to violate the Constitution. So anyway, if you look at the total tonnage of the United States, it's 8,133 tons. That is the highest in the world. And as a matter of fact, it's more than double the next closest nation, which is, guess what? Germany. The next nation, because Germany has 3,352 tons. Italy has 2,452. Now, how did Italy get its hands on that much gold? Well, was that a part of the Roman Empire? Or was that a part of the Spain-Portugal thing? Because if you look and you actually go try to find Spain, because I wasn't even prepared to look for Spain and Portugal, but it started becoming the obvious, right? So as I look, I think the next one is, okay, Spain is 282 tons, and Portugal is actually a little bit better than that, 383. Anyway, and how did they get all of the gold out of the new land, right? Out of the new world. Remember when Cortez was marching across Mexico, he was basically taking everything he could possibly take. And Portugal was doing the exact same thing. I mean, they became, you know, very rich nations quickly because their repository of gold was exponentially improved, you know, because they were bringing ships and ships and ships of gold back home. So as we look at these nations, the top, let's go to the top eight. Italy being the third, the fourth being France, the fifth being Russia. Now, Russia has 2,336 tons. The next nation, and as a matter of fact, I don't know how much gold mining is in Russia or China, but the fact that they have as much as they have is kind of interesting. But China has 2,264 tons as the number sixth. Now, the next one is Switzerland at 1,040. And then the next one is Japan, then India, and so forth. So the old saying, he who holds the most gold actually holds most of the treasure. Folks, I want you to understand something, that this fraud is going to be the excuse of taking all of our gold, taking every last ounce of wealth the United States has. We're being set up for the biggest scam, the biggest grift in world history. Now, one of the things I also did that I thought was going to be interesting for you to know is I totaled up all of the gold held by nations. This doesn't include the gold you may have, your wife may have, you know, the costume or the, you know, the gold in your, you know, in your safe or what have you. I would love to see the totals of gold held by citizens throughout the world by nation. That'd be something else, right? But when we look at what the nations are holding in tonnage, the total is 32,684 tons of gold. Now, one of the things that actually got me thinking about this was I was looking at this strip mine that is pumping out all of this gold coming out of, I think it's South Africa. And we're talking about a strip mine that goes down 4 kilometers. That's a very deep hole. And if you kind of look at how they, you know, how they work this, they're slowly, you know, expanding that thing going down and out, right? And so they got these vehicles that, you know, traverse going all the way down and then go all the way back up. And apparently it's just cheaper to do that than to create a scalable elevating system, a system that could actually, you know, lower and then come back up with that kind of tonnage, moving that much dirt, or a conveyor belt system or something like that. You'd think that they would have engineered something better than the tonnage of all of these trucks driving down this gold, this strip mine, going all the way to the bottom and then working its way all the way back up. Anyway, all that being said, how much money is that in gold today? And if you take the current value of gold in U.S. dollars and you basically times that value towards the 32 tons, you will come to 2.8 plus trillion. In other words, the entire world's value in gold is 2.8 trillion. Think about this. When we look at the United States GDP, it is functioning at somewhere around 20, 25, less than 20 trillion, depending on who's in charge in the White House. And actually, it could even be much greater if we actually had a president that was, you know, building our economy, though he has no constitutional authority to do that. But actually, what would the president, the best thing a president could do is step out of the way. The best thing a president could do is actually hold and constrain Congress and the federal bureaucracies from constraining the states and unleashing the states to be able to harvest their resources and be do what they felt would be best for themselves. Going down that path, we would find an unleashed economy that would just be hard to fathom. But here's the point. If you look at the world and the value and the I'll just say the currency in circulation, well, I'm going to tell you that we're talking about trillions, whatever the number of beyond trillion is, right? Because if we just commuted it all to, or just translated it all into dollars, like the, you know, the Chinese yuan, I mean, there's billions of Chinese, right? Or, yeah, there's a over a billion. The same thing with India. And so when we look at the rubles, the rubies, the yuan, all these different types of currencies, and we commute all of that, all currency in circulation, printed, created in banks, circulation out there, then, and I know that it's not technically in circulation if it's just being held inside a bank. But if it's been printed, we want to count that as circulation, then it's well beyond the trillions, well beyond. Why is this important? Why are these numbers important? Because if we had a legitimate, economy and a legitimate economic system, we would have a dollar for a certain value of gold. In other words, a $100 bill, who knows, maybe the $100 bill would become 1 ounce of gold. Actually, it looks right now like the $2,000 bill would be the, you know, 1 ounce to get it close to its actual currency. But even doing that, because that's where we're paying for this. But the reality is, if you actually translated the currency to the value of gold, it would even be worse. And I haven't even done the math on it because I haven't figured all of that out, and I didn't want to go down that rat hole. But there's no doubt in my mind somebody could easily go down the economics, and I think there's probably a few people listening that'll do this and come to what is 1 ounce really worth based on the world currencies. Because if we look at what's available in the world, and because what are they going to do? The goal is to create a single currency. So it's no longer how many U.S. dollars are in circulation. It's how many digital dollars that they have created. And now that number can easily be morphed and manufactured left and right without being tied to gold. But let's just play the game that we have to tie it to gold. And let's see how much an ounce of gold is really worth based on the currency in circulation, or the currency that's been created. That's more accurate. Now we actually see how much more valuable your gold and silver really is. Because regardless of how much they've manipulated the currency, he who actually is holding gold actually holds wealth. He who holds digital currency, crypto, it doesn't matter. That is arbitrary wealth, and it's arbitrarily created, and the value of it is equally arbitrary. You may be getting a lot of something for nothing right now, but down the road, it could actually become nothing, and you would have nothing. Even if you put everything into it, it could all just go away. Because it's just ones and zeros. It's not property. It is not something that is translated into, liquidated into physical, tangible property. They're just numbers on a screen. And those numbers on a screen can be very, very arbitrary. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help impress upon you regarding that debt that is just being created that is your pending doom, because that's what they're going to try to hold us to. And what do I always say? What is that really? In reality, that debt is fraud, because they don't have the authority to be able to go down that path and just print money and just create entries in a ledger and voila, there's more money. No, money is based upon the holdings of gold, and that is the law of the land. So, when you think about what you may be wanting to do to leverage yourself, buying gold and buying silver would probably be a very smart thing, because if we do go into digital currency, at least you'll have a tangible currency, a species that will still be honored and respected. So what's going to end up having to happen is they're going to have to go down through, they're going to go back into this 1933 model where anybody that had anything, you know, is absolutely a criminal. And they're going to want to motivate people to become criminal or actually reporters, you know, in other words, tattletale, snitches, to say that person has credible property just so they can take it from you. So it forces you into the same playing field. And as a matter of fact, you won't even be able to play in that playing field if they catch you, because they'll probably move you into a penitentiary and you'll just go away in the old Italian sense. Anyway, so I thought that wandering down this little path of talking about gold and silver, because it's been over a year since I was actually keeping track of gold and silver and the value thereof. And as a matter of fact, when I look, because it's been a while since I've actually given you the value currently, the current value of gold is $2,400, $2,433. Silver has declined. It's been around 30. It's down to now $2,747. Now, understanding that there's only so much gold, there's only so much silver, and understanding that there's a couple of other precious metals like palladium and platinum, there's merit in actually considering and expanding different dollars based on different currencies, but, or I should say different coinage based on those different precious metals. And I mean that because back in the days of the framers, did they understand palladium? Did they understand, you know, the element table and some of these other metals and so forth? I don't have a historic element table, but there's no doubt in my mind that element table has expanded and grown as we've become far more immersed in the sciences and so forth. So I would believe that palladium and platinum are two metals that were just, they were unaware of. They had copper, they had nickel, they had gold, and they had silver. So that's why they created sub-denominations that were sub-valued of silver, which was copper and nickel. So anyway, you know, I'm making these comments because the day's going to come when we're going to have to actually go back to, just so that we are grounded again financially based on the Constitution, we're going to have to go back to this hard commutable currency. When they start, I'm okay with them printing dollars that's commutable. That's what they started to do. But when they go into this fiat currency, like what Lincoln did, and there have been other, I think even Ulysses S. Grant played around with this as well. He got his hand slapped. Fact of the matter is that the Constitution mandates that there be a coinage that is representative. And so if you're going to print a bill that you can commute to 500 ounces of silver, then you better have that 500 ounces of silver somewhere where it, You know, because as that money floats out, that silver and gold needs to be kind of distributed out to where those bills are. You shouldn't have to travel all the way to Washington, D.C. to commute that silver and gold. So anyway, are those bills into the hard currency? So anyway, I've killed a lot of time on talking about this. What we're really talking about today is I want to kind of move forward and wrap up what you need to know, what you should already know. And I'm going to take a break from this dialogue of what you should know and what you should be doing right now. So before we get into what we're supposed to be doing, I want to dive into the Electoral College. It happens to be an election year, and I was in a phone call this past week where it just became painfully obvious that nobody understands the Electoral College. Nobody understands this. And the fundamental principles are very simple. We kind of talk about this, and in Why Counties Matter Most, I dive into the details on this. We're not to have, the way they framed the nation, we should not have democracies. We should not have an open democracy in choosing our executives or statewide positions. Why is it that we've gone down this path where we actually allow mob rule? The framers recognized the danger of mob rule, and that anybody, if you got into the debate over the stability and the equity and the justness of a system of mob rule, I think all reasonable people, equally informed, would say that is an abhorrent form of government. We do not want a mob rule government. And so the only people that would say, yes, democracy, democracy, those are the people foaming at the mouth for the Bolshevik Revolution and wanting to destroy what we have and get rid of the checks and balances that they give us. So why are we entertaining and allowing them to continue to pervert our system? So this is why we need to really talk about the Electoral College and talk about, you know, how the Electoral College should have actually grown and permeated into both the state and county, not just the federal level. But with that, so we're going to take a break when I wrap up what we really need to know. And so let me get back to this problem. And actually, even before I do that, let me talk about the cause of this problem. Since going under education, we're talking about education here, since education has fallen under the control of our government, the education system has become a controlled narrative and an indoctrination instead of a fountain of enlightenment. I believe had we kept government out of this, I believe we would have been able to create a system that was, you know, far more superior to where, you know, these atomic microscopes and these things of science, you know, like MRIs and those types of tools of measurement, like an atomic microscope. I honestly think that those things would have been shared. They would have been, you know, kids in, if not elementary school, junior high, would be exposed to the miracles and the wonders of these types of tools. There's no doubt. Because it benefits society to have a very enlightened populace. But if you want to control society, you need to control the narrative to keep them in check. So I'll harangue a little bit more when we come back on our education system, because this whole point of why this show, I believe, is probably the national gem, and I'm not trying to brag, but the fact is we're having the conversations that nobody else wants to have. Nobody really wants to solve the problem. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I think most everybody that listens to this show will probably just agree, completely agree, nod your head, hoodwink, what have you, that if we did a thorough audit on the magnitude of the problem, including our education system, our literacy on the Constitution, I think everybody would agree that it is an untenable, unacceptable indictment that we have allowed ourselves to become controlled and that we've allowed ourselves to be indoctrinated. And as a matter of fact, it is unconscionable to think how many people, how many parents out there that have actual living children are willing and demand that they indoctrinate their children even further down this destructive narrative, whether it be critical race theory and all of this crap. It infuriates me to think that there are such enemies to our society. These people do not have any desire whatsoever that the truth would ever be seen, that it should be hidden, that it would never see the light of day, and that they can obtain full control. You know, if they could just make you into robots and automatons, that's exactly what they would do. And that's what they're trying to do. But they realize, and here is the reality, and this to me is revelation from the Bible. They know they can't. But what they do know is as long as they keep us confused, as long as they can continue to pursue this end of theirs, what is their end? Well, they have to kill a lot of people. Because if they know they really can't control, and they know that the truth is seeping out here and there, because this is like a huge sieve. Yeah, a lot is being held back. I mean, when you put that, that big, huge strainer in front of this fountain or this massive plug of water just draining out of this reservoir, that sieve actually that strainer actually reduces the flow. And what they're willing to accept is that they were successful to get us this far, that all they need to do is that they have matured their sciences in how to kill us and how to manipulate us and control us better, that they want to get to a point where they can kill off enough of us to have whatever is left be conditionable to be controlled. Now, many people, when I say many people are going to die. This is not, any
GR revelation. I am not speaking as a prophet. The scriptures tell us that many people will die. Go read Revelations. As a matter of fact, what's amazing is I made a comment when they were talking about, in social media, there was somebody talking about, you know, what's going to happen and these things. And I said, well, you know, what really, you know, ultimately there's going to be 2/3 because they're talking about how they're trying to kill us. And I just piped in, ultimately 2/3 of the world will die. And this person came back. This is a conservative forum. And a couple of people kind of pushed back and actually liked the comment. Well, hey, what source are you getting this from? And I go, really? This person's asking me based on what? And I come back and say, oh, actually, no, I mentioned in my comment that the Bible states that ultimately 2/3 of the earth will die. And, you know, this person comes back, where specifically does it say that? And I go, really? I have to tell you that? Read Revelations. Revelations creates this metaphorical, you know, I'll just say this prognostication, this revelation that 2/3 of the stars will be darkened. Folks, what the heck's happening right now? We see our skies getting filled and filled and filled with more and more particulates. How is that not creating a darkening and an inhibitor in light coming in from external through our atmosphere for us to see? You know, who would have even thunk? Better yet, how would somebody know if it wasn't by divine inspiration that that was going to happen? Equally, in the same book, books of Revelation, in that book itself, Revelations, it talks about the, you know, this magnitude of human suffrage and death. Now, everybody looks more towards the Armageddon of, you know, that final battle. But by the time we get to Armageddon, most of the people will have died by then. Folks, we're talking about billions of people. And I think everybody that listens to this show has at least a fundamental knowledge that the foods that we're getting in America is subpar, more tainted, and more dangerous than foods anywhere else in the world. Why is this? Why is it that they want to make sure that America has all of these health problems? Now, I can tell you, I deal with it because I talk about the conspiracy theories. The conspiracy theories out there is that we need to become a sick, lame, and lazy population so that the evil hordes can invade us, that they're positioning themselves among us and in Canada and all around so that the evil hordes, China, what have you, will actually take over. Folks, you don't have to think in this crazy context that these things won't happen. Because is it not true that the crap that they're putting in our food, I mean, I see comparisons between the contents of what they put in the same products of whether it be ketchup or what have you in Europe in comparison to what we get here in America today. It's being spiked. Come on, folks. Go make your own food. Start growing your own food. Start buying wholesome food. And quit eating the fast foods and the foods that you're getting out in the system that is being a part of this mass distribution of poison. They're poisoning us from the air. I have no idea if they're running chemtrails over Brazil. But it seems like every picture that I do see, I see the funny clouds. Regardless of where it is in the world, it seems like funny clouds have become prevalent. What is this funny cloud? It's supposedly these contrails, these straight lines of clouds way up in the upper atmosphere, where, you know, those clouds can kind of dissipate and linger and help spread around in the atmosphere.
this is amazing that we're actually seeing all of this unfold. Because anybody that had, you know, no predilection and no understanding of the Bible, the scriptures, because it wasn't their fault. Their parents turned their backs on Christianity. Their parents turned their backs, or grandparents turned their backs on religion. Okay, so people today are actually starting to see these things. And if you're connecting the dots for them, this becomes a huge awakening. Let me just go down this one path, because we've been talking about education, and you know, this is kind of more of a rant of mine, okay? So I'll admit I'm still ranting. I haven't even gotten into the content. But the fact of the matter is innate within every young person in human socio-behavior stuff, that a child in their teenage years become rebellious. It is just a common feature that when the children are during this age span from 12 to 30, this is when they become radical. This is when they can become radicalized and they become, you know, I'll just say foaming at the mouth. They can become very rebellious. The one thing that the children become easily rebellious over is the truth. As a matter of fact, the one thing that entices a child to become rebellious over their parents is the fact that they believe what they have is true over what their parents. And today, when we see the majority of the parents of kids in the school system today, the majority of those parents are just sheep. They don't even care about the truth. They're going along with the narrative that we need to wear masks and so forth. Those children with those parents could easily tap into that, what is it, potential energy? Kinetic energy is energy moving. It is easy to tap that potential energy and convert it into kinetic energy for a revolution for the truth. Do you understand what I'm saying? But how do we get the truth out there? How do we actually get this catalyst moving to where kids actually in school, in junior high and high school, actually start getting involved in the truth? Folks, what do you think these First Amendment petitions would do? All it would take is just a little bit of education in helping children understand these concepts of the First Amendment petition and understanding what the truth is by reading these petitions to say they have no authority to be involved in doing the things that they're doing. And I'm telling you, we could turn America around. The potential, go look at how many kids are in the school system today. There's millions. This is because, you know, we've been maintaining the status quo. Last time I looked, if I remember correctly, I think over the 4 or 6 year span of, you know, late middle school to graduation high school, there's something like 50 million kids. Now, I need to look it up again because it's been a while since I looked it up, but you can go look it up for yourself. That's a lot of combatants. That's a lot of kids wanting to know the truth and kids basically putting off their education system. We need to make that Pink Floyd song popular again. We don't need no education. We don't need your thought control. You know, that mantra right there will actually help awaken and actually start moving things to where we actually can start. Because instead of getting these kids to go out into the streets, we get these kids to actually be with us, locking arms in front of our politicians in the middle of the county, you know, in the middle of your county commissioner meetings, your public meetings, and your state legislature, going in and demanding that they do their job and calling for compliance to the Constitution and protecting us. So
this actually kind of goes down to where I left off yesterday. I'll get into the Electoral College probably once we wrap this up. So let me try to wrap this up because I've got about 13 minutes. So as I was kind of talking about in the last episode, I was talking about how, you know, these at the county level, we can create these laws. At the state level, we can create these laws. But hold on here. Let me make sure we're all on the same page. They cannot create laws that are not enumerated. In other words, as we talk about laws, in the last episode, I really failed to place emphasis on the laws that politicians should or actually have the ability to be involved in. And that those are those things that are enumerated, like Congress. The only laws that Congress can be playing with is the laws of the printing and regulating the value of our coins or the value of the metal, the precious metal of our currency system. They have the authority, responsibility, and power to declare war. And so those are the political compromises that they can play with. But they can't play with the energy. They can't play with speech. They can't play with education. They can't play with housing. They can't play with labor. Those things are not enumerated at the federal level. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. They were not enumerated at the state level. So the only place where we should ever enumerate those types of powers, if you really want to go down that path of saying we're going to actually have standards for this behavior of housing, we want everybody to be able to provide these living conditions for their children. Now, I will tell you that that is a very pretentious society when people can actually coexist. They can live, because look at how America lived. It was very common that people just lived in a one-room cabin. That this big cabin actually was your your dining area, your kitchen, your family area. It was all the bedroom. It was all together. So it was absolutely amazing that parents or two people could actually procreate and have children in that type of setting. So I have no idea what mom and dad had to do to make the next baby, but I'm sure that they weren't doing it, right there in front of everybody, because there was a very moral society, at least for the most part. They were far more moral then than they are today. So I have a hard time thinking that they actually went down these paths of doing things that, would have been, improper. Not that everybody's perfect, but the fact of the matter is, it's very pretentious to say, to have people that we allow to immigrate here, to say, you have to live to these kinds of standards. We can have these recommendations and so forth, but we definitely don't want the federal government controlling that, because next thing you know, they're going to be controlling the building, the construction, and who moves into the housing. We cannot allow government to control those things. It's one thing to have the churches and the communities involved in trying to help people. That's what compassion's all about. That's what compassionate services are for. But government is there to protect life and property, not to be involved in compassionate services, not to be involved in education, not to be involved in feeding your family, not to be involved in giving you anything. The only thing that they should give you is security from harm, from being killed, unless we have to fight a war. Or they should be protecting, and the security given you is protecting your property, knowing that if somebody stole or did harm to you or your property, they would be accountable to the law. Government has grown and grown and grown and grown. And isn't it so impressive of how well and how stellar they have done in growing and assuming more and more power? The reason that they have is because we've allowed that to happen. So when we talked about, because really I was wrapping up in my last episode, I was talking about the influence that somebody from the coastline might have over somebody in the mountain area or vice versa. Those people, whether it's a business, whether it's people, if they're not from that area, they should have nothing to say. They should not be able to influence the legislator that is representing your county or the people of your county, period. It's one thing to say if your representative in the state Senate and your representative in the state House are dealing with contracts that are being executed throughout the state, and that contractor happens to live in a particular county that they're not in yours. Well, they should be able to talk about that very specific, like building a road or what have you. Then the scope of the conversation should be within the execution of the contract and that responsibility, period. But to actually talk about other bills and we need to pass this or we need to do that, that becomes a slippery slope. What we have to do is we have to recognize, and we should guard jealously, your representatives. Our representatives need to be guarded. I'm telling you, it is to their advantage to have an open door with a little pot next to their desk saying, please contribute. I love being here and I'd like to stay here. Just give me money. Because that's what ends up happening. That's how the essence of corruption occurs. Keep in mind, we have corrupt elections because we've allowed money to become the base of the election. You don't believe me? I've talked about this before. When we even look at Trump and Trump's willingness to support and actually endorse a campaign, he won't endorse a campaign until that campaign has earned so much money. You're not serious unless you've earned $70,000 for a representative job, for a seat of a representative position. In other words, they have these thresholds. And I'm going, are you kidding me? This is the essence of our problem, folks. And I hate to be exposing Trump because that's just because that is what I know right now. And I know that he's not the only one. This is the standards of the party. The party does everything they can. And they do. I just saw this in the state of Washington where, backing up, we have representatives at the party level. Supposedly, these people, this is the grassroots. These are the people that represent their constituents at their precincts and within their counties and so forth. And they moved forward with what they called the state endorsements of political candidates. In other words, Semi Byrd was the endorsed candidate out of the Washington State GOP election, or the election candidate out of that convention that they just had in April or March timeframe. So moving forward, guess what ended up happening? The executive committee of the Washington State Republican Party chose to actually side with what they called mainstream Republicans, not the grassroots Republicans, mainstream, meaning the money Republicans. In other words, these are the people that had the money. And they basically says, we're not going to pour money into the party unless it's for these candidates. We don't care what the grassroots wanted. Folks, do you understand what I just said? The money that came into the party was corrupting it because the party plays to that level, because the elections play to that level. Money itself is what is polluting and corrupting, and this happens all the time. This is why our court systems are so corrupt, because it's all about money. Well, we have to get money out of every facet of our government and out of our system. When I say system, I mean our societal system, our education system. I mean, How is our education system driven? It's driven by money. It's driven by the pharmaceutical companies for medicine. It is driven by these people who have all the money that they want to control the sciences, whether that be medicine, whether that be pharmaceutical, whether that be chemistry, whether that be engineering. All of these things are now becoming more and more corrupt because those people who have these monopolies are making sure that you're doing things that will benefit them in the education system. This is the essence of our corruption. And this is why we need to understand republicanism. Republicanism should have nothing to do with money. It should have everything to do with the powers delegated. Remember, because the rule of law, the Constitution is where we delegate the powers, and those are the only powers our government is to have. Understanding, getting back to understanding republicanism, understanding who should be representing you. The fact is that we need to take back our counties. And so now that I'm down to 2 minutes left, I think I'm ready to kind of migrate back to the course of this discussion, because as we start understanding republicanism and not worrying about government serving us to give us things, government has no responsibility. If you look at your Constitution, it would be foolish to put in your Constitution that everybody has to have an equal amount of money, because what that will do is will invoke communism. Government is basically to make sure that the playing field for everybody to enter into business, to go to work, what have you. It is even Steven that nobody gets advantages. Pharmaceuticals don't get advantages. Nobody, money, your money is not welcome in our governing system. The money itself is a fundamental, or actually a rudimentary function, a perfunctory function, if I could say that, is perfunctory. It is just fundamental that that's what they have to do. And that's it. They basically make sure that there's enough gold and silver to back the paper that is necessary to driving our economy, to ensure that the value is being maintained, because it is theft. It is theft to actually watch somebody's property become devalued, or it is theft to see somebody's property being taken from them because they can't afford the taxes on it. Property tax is antithetical to our governing system, where our government is supposed to protect private property. It is antithetical to that principle. We have to actually have these conversations so that we can actually create focus on Republican form of government. If we keep on going to the court, then we're basically empowering a judiciary form of government. The conversations must be with our representatives. They must start understanding this fundamental function of republicanism, that they are to be held to the Constitution, and those are the only things that they can play with, and that they only represent those people from the area that they came from, not everybody that has money walking through their door. When we come back on Friday, we're going to dive into the Electoral College, and then we'll get back onto, now you know the important thing, now what are you supposed to be doing?
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract.
Okay, so the one thing I didn't say was, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Sorry, I had some limitations, and I wasn't watching the clock. But we will be back with the Electoral College. God bless.
Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on Reclaiming feedtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.